Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
Dan Feldman here. Welcome to Locked On Pistons. Follow us on Audio Boom or subscribe on iTunes. Today's Locked On Pistons is brought to you by SeatGeek. Download the mobile app for the easiest way to buy tickets. The promo code LOPISTONS. That's L-O as in Locked On Pistons. LOPISTONS. We'll get you a $20 rebate on your first purchase. Today we're going to be talking Basketball Hall of Fame. Enshrinement ceremony is tonight. A historically great class featuring Shaquille O'Neal, Allen Iverson, and Yao Ming. And you see those big names, you think about their career, Shaq with the Lakers and even the Magic, Iverson with the 76ers, Yao, of course, only with the Rockets. And it seems like, oh yeah, it's great for the NBA. And then, wait a second. One of them was a Piston. Allen Iverson, just so briefly, and that season had nothing to do with him making the Hall of Fame. He was pretty lousy that year, hurt the Pistons probably more than he helped them, even just within his own control. The trade to bring him to Detroit was a disaster. The Pistons gave up Chauncey Billups, who flourished with the Nuggets. I think that trade was the turning point for a lot of fans with Joe Dumars. Plenty had obviously turned on him before. Plenty turned after as a result of other moves. But that was a real seminal moment in Pistons history, and it is part of Iverson's legacy. For those of you who don't know, and this is one of the things that's gotten a little bit lost to history, the Pistons, right around when Joe Dumars first became their general manager, tried to trade for Allen Iverson in the year 2000. And it was a big, complicated trade, six teams, $24 million. And I'm not sure if we've ever gotten a straight story on exactly who would have gone where. But a piece of that trade was Matt Geiger, who was the 76ers center. And he had a trade kicker in his contract that he would have had to waive as a condition of the deal. And I believe Geiger was going to end up with the Pistons with Iverson. And Geiger said, no, I'd rather stay in Philadelphia. You know, if you're not going to pay me this extra money that I'm entitled to on a trade, I'd rather stay in Philadelphia and go to Detroit. And that's a perfectly valid opinion by him. And so it nixed the whole deal. It was all dependent on him being included. His salary was necessary to make it match. So Iverson stays in Philadelphia. The 76ers go to the finals the next year. And that endeared Iverson in Philly for a while. Now, of course, he eventually moved on to the Nuggets. And that's where the Pistons came in again, successfully pulling the trigger on the trade, getting Allen Iverson. I was a big fan of the trade at the time. Oops. I thought Iverson was exceptionally good the year before. Not only was he the high-volume scorer he had always been, maybe not quite at his peak level, but his efficiency was through the roof. He had never been so efficient. It seemed like a breakthrough year where he had figured out how to blend some of his skills to be more efficient, to rein it in just a little, to be a better decision maker. The things that his critics rightfully had brought up for years. And maybe he did, maybe it was a fluky year, like with sample size, maybe he was just going to have one high efficient year. But it did not work in Detroit. I think the more likely thing was maybe he figured some of it out, and maybe some of it was sample size, a little bit of both. But with small guards, when they get into their 30s, they can age very, very quickly. And I think that's what happened. It was hard to watch Iverson in Detroit. A player who's so known and recognized for his ability to fearlessly attack the rim, he was missing layups because he didn't have enough lift on his jumper. He didn't have enough lift on his layups. Like, it was a mess. The Pistons ran into trouble with Michael Curry, a first-time coach. He didn't know how to handle Iverson and Rip Hamilton and Rodney Stuckey in the backcourt. A lot of conflicting narratives, but probably the most likely thing, it seems like he promised Iverson and Hamilton that they would start. It didn't really work. Iverson was trying to run the point at times. That didn't really work. Hamilton was unhappy. Iverson was unhappy. I doubt Stuckey was happy, although he was younger, so he had a little less room to complain. Just a lot of problems all around with it. Eventually, the Pistons came up with a story about Allen Iverson having back problems, and he was pretty much done for the season at that point. It's really hard to believe that those back problems were legitimate, although I'm sure, you know, there were some injury issues just related to being a small guard who attacked the basket for a long career over time. But I think it was more of an issue of Iverson didn't want to play anymore. The Pistons didn't want him anymore. He was hurting the team. So everybody agreed he would just go home for the rest of the year. And that was the year 2009. The Pistons limped into the playoffs as the 8th seed, got swept handily by the Cavs. Detroit, nobody else had any interest in being the playoffs either. And I think this was the negative side of Iverson's attitude. You know, just he took apart the whole team. And it wasn't all his fault. You know, the Pistons put him in a position where they somewhat asked him to be a leader, somewhat were very dismayed by how he led. Especially in hindsight, it was just a bad plan throughout, and it worked predictably badly. Pistons let Iverson go after the year, and that was pretty much the end of his NBA career. He went back to Philly for a bit. He went to Memphis for a bit, but he was never the same. And he wasn't really good in Detroit, so he really built this Hall of Fame career all before this. And it was a Hall of Fame career. It included two playoff matchups against the Pistons. One was the 2003 second round. That was after the Pistons had come back from down 3-1 against the Magic. And Iverson was excellent in that series. He scored 14 points on 5 of 25 shooting in one of the games. But otherwise, I guess he did have 25 on 23 shots. But otherwise, he had 36 points, 38 points, 30 points. He was putting up numbers. And the Pistons had a hard time containing him. He just didn't have enough of a supporting cast. A couple years later, the Pistons met up with the 76ers in the 2005 first round. The Pistons beat them in 5. Wasn't that highly competitive. I think Iverson and the Sixers were starting to see some of the limits on what he could bring to the table with that supporting cast. That's really the flaw of Iverson, is he didn't do much else but score. I think he was an underrated passer, but teams didn't ask him to do that. He wasn't necessarily looking to do that. And because scoring is the most coveted skill in the NBA, and especially was at that point, his salary was so high, it made it harder to build a supporting cast around him. 2001, when they went to the finals and lost to the Lakers, was really the perfect storm. Led by Dikembe Mutombo, a bunch of defense-first players around him. They did the dirty work. They let Iverson do the scoring. It worked well, but it's hard to duplicate. You have very little margin for error. The Pistons, by the time they had Iverson, Iverson was still looking to have that major role, but he also was even less capable of doing that stuff himself. So it worked predictably poorly. But still, great career, great Hall of Fame career. It's a shame it didn't work out in Detroit. His toughness, his attitude, definitely reminiscent of Isaiah Thomas as an undersized guard who willed himself to be great against major odds. He would have been a great fit in Detroit had he been there in his prime, in the same way he was in Philly, another blue-collar city. Unfortunately, didn't work out the timing in Detroit. It's a major what-if. What would have happened if the Pistons got him in 2000? I think it worked out well in hindsight. Joe Dumars built that going-to-work championship team. I don't think it would have gone better with Iverson. It's just... From the many Pistons fans who are also Iverson fans because they respect the way he played, it's just a little sad that the timing didn't work out to see it. But all things considered, I'd rather take everything that happened than have Iverson then closer to his prime. I also want to talk about Shaq and Yao and what it was like for the Pistons going against them. But first, I want to talk to you about SeatGeek. Football is back, and SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to find tickets for the games you want to see up close and in person this season. There's nothing like being in the stadium for the biggest plays of the year, and with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the seats you want for great value. SeatGeek has the best deals on every ticket in the house, wherever you want to sit, whether it's the 50-yard line, the club seats, or the upper level. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's a very easy way to find tickets. I can be anywhere with just a few taps. I can instantly find seats for this weekend or any game this season. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket because SeatGeek prices compare for you by searching multiple ticket sites. Prices can vary depending on where you shop, but SeatGeek will always find you the lowest available price. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Very easy to sort. You can see an all-inclusive ticket price, number of tickets. Very, very simple. Plus, every ticket you buy on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee. Best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and click add a promo code. Enter the promo code LOPISTONS. That's LOPISTONS. L-O as in locked on Pistons. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LOPISTONS. That's LOPISTONS today. One of my first memories of going to any sporting event was in 1996, Pistons Magic Game 3 in the Eastern Conference first round playoffs. This is back when it was best of five. And the Magic had Shaquille O'Neal and Penny Hardaway and Nick Anderson and Dennis Scott and Horace Grant. Now, this was a pretty good Magic team. And they blew out the Pistons in game one and two in Orlando. First game was by 20. The second game was by 15. And game three was back in Detroit. Pistons would have had to win three in a row to come back. The odds seemed against it. They looked out of it. But they played so hard that game. They gave it everything they had. And they only lost to the Magic by three. And at the time, with a young Grant Hill, with a young Allen Houston, it seemed like, okay, this is a nice building block for the Pistons. That was an effort they could be proud of in that game, you know, against a Magic team that went on to the Eastern Conference Finals where they lost to the Michael Jordan Bulls. But the other side of that was, man, Shaq was good. He was so good and so imposing, and getting by him was not going to be easy. Now, in that game three, they roughed him up a little bit, held him to 13 points on 13 shots and 5 rebounds. But he was still, like, you could just see his physical dominance. Even as the Pistons frustrated him a little bit, like, it was like, okay, this is nice. Like, this is nice for a game. Maybe the Pistons could win a game. That'd be a nice treat. They still couldn't do it. But the idea that they could, and that really set the tone for Shaq for the next decade. I mean, just a dominant, dominant player. For my money, maybe the second most dominant. Doesn't mean second best. A lot of that has to do with your position. It's easier to dominate as a center than as a guard. Depends who you're going against. You know, some of Shaq's career was not against the best era of centers, especially in the mid-late part of his career when he was winning that three-peat with the Lakers. But he was excellent. I'd have Wilt Chamberlain as the most dominant ever, for what it's worth. But then there were happier times ahead for the Pistons against Shaq. I'm sure I don't need to remind you about the 2004 finals when the Pistons beat Shaq and Kobe's Lakers in a 5-game sweep. Shaq was pretty good in that series. He was really good. But the Pistons defended him one-on-one, whether it was Ben Wallace, Rasheed Wallace, Eldon Campbell, I think, got some minutes on him. The Pistons just had so many defenders they could throw at Shaq and defend him one-on-one and make sure they didn't get killed by Shaq. Like, that's all they had to do. They could lose that matchup, although a lot of times they didn't lose that matchup because the Pistons were so dominant. Ben and Sheed were just that good. But they were willing to lose that matchup and maybe even play it to a draw or however it ended up to make sure that other players on the Lakers didn't get going. And so the Pistons' ability just to play one-on-one with Shaq was so huge. Unfortunately, that wasn't the last the Pistons saw of Shaq. They saw him again in the 2005 conference finals. Shaq was up and down a little bit in that. It was a fun series. The Pistons won in seven to make it back to the finals where they lost to the Spurs. And Shaq gave them all they could handle. Like, Shaq demanded this trade from the Lakers. He went to the Heat. A lot of Pistons fans were a little nervous about them, myself included. I mean, the Heat had Dwayne Wade up and coming. Like, this was really a team on the rise, a team that was trying to build up their roster to beat the Pistons, who were the force in the Eastern Conference at this point, supplanting the Nets. And the Heat gave it their all. I thought they might be a year away from doing it, and they were. But they pushed the Pistons. They really did. Dwayne Wade got hurt in that series, and you never know what would have happened if he were fully healthy. But that's part of the game. The Pistons did their part to beat Shaq. But again, 2006, the very next year, Pistons Heat in a conference finals rematch, and there was Shaq being a force again. And that was really the first time I thought Ben Wallace started to slip defensively. I have the utmost respect for Ben Wallace's ability at his peak. I think at one point he was the third best player in the NBA behind Tim Duncan and Kevin Garnett. I think he was that good at his peak. But in 2006, that's when I noticed the signs of slippage, because Shaq was working him down low in a way that we didn't see in the 2005 conference finals, although there were small signs of it then. Definitely not in a way we saw in the 2004 finals when Shaq was still with the Lakers. And Shaq was just having his way. And it was tough to watch Ben Wallace just get work like that. Ben Wallace, this was the part of his defense that slipped first in that moment. And it's sort of weird because he eventually got this back and turned it into a strength as other aspects slipped. But Ben Wallace just could not guard Shaq in the post easily. He was still switching onto guys, very effective as a help defender still. But when it was him against Shaq, Shaq was just a little more nimble, a little more powerful, and he worked him. And that got to the Heat to the finals, where they beat the Mavericks to win their first title in franchise history. So there's a lot of great playoff moments for Shaq and against Shaq, against the Pistons. And so I think that's something the Pistons should be proud of, that they've been playing deep in the postseason where they can have those moments against players like Shaq and Iverson. And then there's Yao Ming, who obviously the Pistons never faced in the playoffs. His Rockets were not a real threat to advance. But I do have some fond memories of Ben Wallace guarding Yao Ming, who was so big and seemed like such a challenge for Wallace, who was really an undersized center, listed at 6'9". I think the afro helped. And I think Ben Wallace made Yao Ming a better player. You can question whether or not Yao Ming deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, how much credit he gets for globalizing the game coming from China rather than his actual ability. I don't like to get into that because it's a basketball Hall of Fame, not an NBA Hall of Fame. Those are the parameters they've set. I don't exactly like that, but trying to figure out what they're doing, good luck. That can be somebody else's challenge. But I think for as well as Yao played, and he had an excellent career, Ben Wallace deserves some credit because Ben was such a crafty defender, such a smart defender. It made up for the size difference. Yao Ming could not take advantage of his size advantage against Ben Wallace for a long time because Ben Wallace was such a smart defender. And that made Yao better. Yao got to the point where he could take advantage. And that's a credit to Yao. And he used that against several other players. It's not just Ben Wallace. But he became a better overall player because of that matchup. It was a lot more fun to watch when I think Ben really had Yao Ming's number. and Yao had all that hype. I enjoyed those moments. They weren't obviously as high stakes as the playoff series against Iverson or Shaq, but they were just fun moments, you know, in a great player, one of the better players of his generation. But really, the big ones were against Shaq. That's what I'll remember most fondly. And when the Pistons beat Shaq's Lakers in 2004, there were those ugly moments with Iverson and in 2009, but they're part of the Pistons story. And so as this 2016 Hall of Fame class goes in, I just think it's a real cool thing, the part the Pistons played in all three of those major players' legacies. Today's Locked On Pistons was brought to you by SeatGeek. Download the mobile app for the easiest way to buy tickets, and the promo code LOPISTONS will get you a $20 rebate on your first purchase. Follow us on Audioboom or subscribe on iTunes. While you're there, check out Locked On Lions, Matt Derry's podcast, which is also part of the Locked On Network. Also, check out today's fastbreak.com. Thanks for listening.
Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.